From unknown parts of metropolitan New York City, I am the hip and this is the lip.
Yes, hello, good evening, everybody out there in hipster land. And a nice Tuesday evening here in May, as the temperature is a nice, cool, crisp 50-something degrees. Yes, it is.
Dun, 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 dun. Let's go, Islanders. This is for the
clap,
whole season.
Clap,
Let's
clap,
go,
clap,
Islanders.
Clap, 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 clap.
It took a lot. It took a lot to try to sing the intro song. And yes, that is not a recording. That is a original version done every single episode to sing it as enthusiastically as other episodes, as we have to discuss the postseason for your New York Islanders here on May 10th, 2016, as they were in fact eliminated by the Tampa Bay Lightning in five games in the second round of the 2015-2016 NHL Stanley Cup playoffs.
Yes, that's right.
And not only were they eliminated, but they scored one goal in their last two games. And it was just a very tough ending to a series that turned on the game that we last discussed last episode, Game 3. But the Islanders had it in their pocket and gave up the lead with 38 seconds to go. Left a really bad taste in all of our mouths as Islander fans, and the Islanders just limped to the golf course thereafter in games 4 and 5. So, look.
Yeah, the insult that we were throwing at Ranger fans in Nashville about how's Henrik Lundqvist's pitching wedge, or how's his 5-iron swing doing? Well, I guess now Thomas Kreis, if the goalie fraternity is holds up true, then I guess he can go join Henrik on the golf course. But yes, this is the official post-mortem episode of Hip and the Lip, as the Islanders' season has come to an end. And as you mentioned, and a more somber, melancholy, morose tone to this episode as opposed to past episodes. You won't really see much anger spewed from the lip. At least, I don't think so. Maybe a little spontaneity will kick in, and the passions will get fired up. Will start to arise out of me, and maybe you'll hear some anger expressed. But for right now, I'm just gonna, let the tone that the season now, of course, the end of the season has brought upon us, I'll kind of express that.
And so, we're only torturing ourselves by having on the Capitals-Penguins game in the background as they are in the third period, with the Capitals down two goals facing elimination to the forever seemingly surging Pittsburgh Penguins in this season. And look, so what are we going to talk about tonight? There's a lot that we could talk about, and I think we should break it up into segmented episodes for the postmortem, if you will. But let's recap the games. We got to do our thing. That's what we do. And throughout that, we'll kind of give some thoughts on the season as a whole. And we'll save off-season questions, roster, players, coaches, owners, all that stuff, for next week. So, because that stuff is still sinking in. Let's get to the games, to the series. Last episode, we just came off that horrific Game 3 loss that was at Barclays. The series was tied 1-1. That put the Islanders down 2-1. They had the game in their pocket. Cal Clutterbuck had the goal that took the lead of the game, and we thought the Islanders were going to somehow be ahead 2-1 in the series. Didn't happen, and from there, it was painful to watch. In general, the Islanders losing another overtime game at Barclays, 2-1. That was game four. So just two overtime. I mean, the Islanders with so many overtime games in this playoffs, but two back-to-back overtime losses at Barclays to the Lightning, and you know, just a really tough game. That one they were in, and they, you know, clearly could have evened up the series, but they didn't, and they dug themselves a huge hole. So, you know, what from that game though did jump out at you?
I mean, it was another good first period for them. I mean, you know, we talked about in the last episode how they got off to a tremendous start in game three. Disappointing that they only came away with a tie. You know, it was 1-1 at the end of the first period in game three. A very late power play goal by Callahan in that one. This one, they did come away with a 1-0 lead, but it should have been more because they had a 4-minute power play in which the team did nothing. It was an early power play goal in the game. Kyle Okposo off of a nice feed from Nikolai Kuhlman, set himself up in front of the net, a little tic-tac-toe play. Kuhlman, you know, behind the, you know, below the end line there. The goal line was able to get it out to Okposo, who set himself up nicely in the slot. Nice shot over the glove of Bishop, and early 1-0 lead for the team. We're watching, of course, in Nashville, and we erupted in a local Nashville bar as Okposo scored that goal. But they had a 4-minute power play. Callahan took a 4-minute penalty, committed two different penalties, and got 4 minutes worth of penalties. And the Islanders had an opportunity there to take a bigger lead and, you know, maybe actually expand to a multi-goal lead, something that they didn't have in the series since game one, and maybe, you know, put the Lightning on their heels and really just kind of, you know, press the Lightning and, you know, come away, you know, with the, you know, at least I have a really good opportunity to come away with the victory and even the series and, you know, come back to Tampa tied, but, you know, it didn't happen. They only get the one goal. The power play was awful. I mean, they generated nothing on that power play. And really from there, I mean, the Islanders did control play for a good portion of the game, but, you know, could only get that one goal, obviously. And, you know, multiple opportunities. Tavares had a great opportunity, hit a post. Calvin DeHaan had a great opportunity, put it just right into the pad of Bishop. He was sprawl, you know, he was kind of off balance there. He had a gaping five hole to DeHaan and just kind of threw it right back into his pad. Okposo had another great chance, a great feed from Tavares. He was, you know, he was stone on the play. And that's a theme we're going to get into, Kyle Okposo, and I want to touch on him some more. We'll be touching on lots of groping, caressing. Actually, no, not so much. I'm not going to caress Okposo. It doesn't deserve it. But, yeah, the Islanders, you know, would out-Corsi. We haven't mentioned, you know, we haven't Corsied in a couple episodes. So they out-Corsi Tampa in during 5-on-5 play, 53-37. So usually that will indicate that they did control play, which they did for a good portion of the game. But, hey, look, the Lightning hung around. They're a team that doesn't panic. You can tell. I mean, like, you know, we talked about in the last episode in game three, just, you know, their composure on that, you know, especially on the tying goal, just, you know, waiting for the opportunity to make the right play, which Jonathan Drouin did on that tying goal in game three, finding Kucherov in the slot. And again, just staying composed, not, you know, allowing the Islanders too many great opportunities. I mean, yes, the Islanders control play, but other than the ones I mentioned, not too many other prime scoring chances. And, you know, really, I never felt tested Bishop a whole lot. And then, of course, the Lightning would get the tying goal in the last, what was it, six, seven minutes of the third period. You know, it wasn't bad coverage by the Islanders in the defensive zone. You can nitpick a little bit. Hamonic behind the net goes to the puck carriers. Now you have two guys on the puck behind the end line. Letty actually turned the puck over, which preceded the goal. Strome lost the board battle behind the net. Hamonic goes to the puck carrier. Tyler Johnson, I believe, was able to find Kucherov in the slot. And, you know, just was able to get off a really quick wrist shot that beat Thomas Greiss short side. A goal that, you know, he could have, that you could say he should have stopped, but it was a really good shot by Kucherov. Again, just killed the Islanders in this series, and he's a superstar in the making, Kucherov. He is a tremendous player. He is just he's a hell of a player. I mean, he is going to be a future star in this league if he's not already. And really not, I mean, you're basically saying Steven Stamkos who right now if you're a Lightning fan, because they have, you know, the replacement right here in Kucherov. And but again, you know, a terrific shot by Kucherov to tie the game. And then, of course, we would go to overtime where the Lightning would win it very quickly again, very early in the overtime, as they did in game three. No cheaper, you know, no cheap or vicious hit that should have been penalized for this one. It was just a shot off of a one-timer that left the Garrison, the defenseman for Tampa Bay, took a really nice feed from the right point and was able to, one time a really good shot past Thomas Greiss, beat him far side. Greiss, I thought, had decent position there, but he was completely screened on the play. At least it looked like he did. You know, he didn't really react to the shot. Calvin DeHaan was set up right in front of him. I don't know what the hell DeHaan was doing there, if he was looking to block the shot, but you see Greiss immediately look in DeHaan's direction as soon as the puck goes in. Like, what are you doing, man? Yeah, I couldn't see that shot. You know, get out of my way. And that was all she wrote, and another demoralizing loss, and that will take us to game five eventually. You know, in the next couple minutes, I'll let you get a few more things in there before we do, but really a demoralized team. And if you had to, you know, venture the guess as to the Islanders, you know, just their, you know, I guess that at that point, you know, their ability to come back in the series, seeing the start that they got off to in game five, made you realize just how demoralized they were. All right.
Back-to-back overtime losses at home.
Brutal. Games that they very easily could have won.
And, you know, I kept thinking to myself, though, in the first round of the playoffs and into the second round of the playoffs, there were games where the Islanders won and they were probably outplayed. And I think the Islanders in general were outplayed in the playoffs. I at least on a 5-by-5 standpoint, taking out the goaltending for a minute. I just look, there were certain games they found ways to win. Look, they did take care of business against Florida, but you never really felt like this team was, other than John Tavares, you know, playing like the superstar that he is, and Thomas Greiss being more than adequate, you saw glimpses of good play, but nothing consistent from anyone else, really. And if there's no few players that you can rely on to keep you in these games, you're asking for inconsistency. I mean, that's all there is to it. You know, your superstar can only take you so far, and he single-handedly, in game six in the first round, got the Islanders to, and, you know, and it's not a knock on Greiss, but, you know, if JT doesn't do what he did in that game six, I'd see the Islanders losing game seven in Florida, and we didn't make it this far. And then the Islander season is even more of a disappointment.
Yeah, no, I agree. I looked like the clock struck midnight for Thomas Greiss, who, you know, didn't have a bad series, but, you know, was definitely outplayed by Ben Bishop. You know, he played his heart out, you know, throughout the whole postseason, but, you know, was terrific in the first round, but this round, you know, definitely came back to earth a little bit, you know, had a couple tough goals go by him, you know, definitely looked like he was exposed. It looked like the Lightning maybe had the book on him a little bit, knew where to shoot, you know, knew where, you know, the, you know, pounce on a couple rebounds, you know, beat him, you know, just on his lateral movement. They were able to take advantage of that. But hey, look, the Lightning were, you know, were definitely a different type of opponent than the Florida Panthers. And yeah, I mean, the Florida Panthers, I mean, if you assess that entire series and you do it objectively, I mean, you know, to your objective observer, you're going to say, hey, look, the Islanders won. Yeah. But I think the Florida Panthers outplayed them in many aspects of, you know, the games in that series. And that would be a fair statement. And, you know, we'll get to the ramifications of their loss and the themes, the general themes throughout these playoffs and the season. If you want to get there now, we can do that. Or I guess we can, or if you want to get the game five and just say, okay, that was all she wrote, moving on, which there really isn't too much really to talk about for game five, as again, their dejected state and demoralized state carried right over into game five. is we were watching at a bar in Nashville on our way back from Nashville early on. And then we're able to luckily, or I guess I shouldn't say luckily, but we were able to get free Wi-Fi or TV through Southwest. And I was able to catch the remainder of the game while we were flying. And, you know, yeah, just, you know, 4-0 loss, terrible game, start to finish.
Now, I mean, do you blame coaching for part of that? Is it, or is it just this team emotionally, you know, look, you could coach them up as best you can. I don't think it's a game planning thing. I think it's more of a, you know, motivational thing.
Oh, no, absolutely.
And they just didn't have it. And it felt like a 2-goal deficit was insurmountable at that point. Like the Islanders just never really showed much. I think there were maybe one or two really good chances they had, and it just, they didn't capitalize on those. And, you know, Tampa Bay just far outplayed them from start to finish, just ready to take the series, and they can relax a little while they watch this other game, this other series, which is now scores 3-2 in the third period. So
yes,
we'll see if the Capitals can keep the pressure on and force a game seven. We could have 3 game sevens in the second round of the playoffs.
If I really want to emulate my hero Mike Francesa, I can start doing play by play. You know, when that I come out to boys. Okay, now Orpik plays it back to his point man.
I can't
do that though because we may get in trouble.
He's good. our lead creative consultant will. And I think he already will
that.
At this point for us. You know, going back to a game that we're watching while it's on. But look. There's an emotional side to it for us too. I mean, we could try to be as energetic as possible, but when our podcast is about the Islanders and their season's over and there's not much excitement surrounding the team right now, I think it's only fair if we try to distract ourselves a little bit by watching the other teams that are still in it.
Yeah, definitely. I was going to get to this a little bit later. It was definitely a different feeling with the team losing this year as opposed to last year. Last year, I think I probably described this maybe in our first episode because that was when they played the Capitals, and I went back to did a little retrospective on their loss to the Capitals in the playoffs last year, and that definitely felt like a gut punch just because I thought that the Islanders failed in giving the Nassau Coliseum a proper send-off. They had an opportunity to win a game seven. They didn't show up. As they didn't show up in this game five, but as you mentioned, you questioned preparation, game planning, and Jack Capuano now has not had his team prepared for an elimination game. He didn't have his team prepared for an elimination game last year in game seven, which was inexcusable. This year, I think it was just the emotional state of the team that was not prepared. We are going to distract ourselves and now with the other games going on. And I guess what I was also going to say is that last year after the Islanders lost to the Capitals, the Capitals then played the Rangers. I think that following Saturday it was game one. And I had absolutely no desire to watch it. Like I wanted to avoid it at all costs because I said the Islanders should be at the Garden right now playing the Rangers, not the Capitals. And this year, a little bit different, definitely was not, as much of a gut punch as the loss last year to the Capitals was. Good hockey to watch now.
The Islanders were trying to break through on something that had been haunting them for a long time, that is winning a playoff series. That was a game seven here. Look, I think you could tell any objective observer watching, most of these games of the teams that are left in the second round, maybe with the exception of Nashville, I think all the other teams are clearly a level or more, not that we're defining levels with much precision, but, are significantly better than the Islanders have been in the playoffs.
We don't have a scale. We have delineating variations of good
levels.
Here.
Levels.
We're both levels. Okay.
I think the Islanders, their season ended where their quality of team brought them. And that, and I think, look, we said enough about Game Five. I mean, it just was awful. But look,
it was a no show. But I think it was after the first goal. I mean, you said a 2-goal lead was insurmountable. I think once they scored the first goal, Hedman, and it was of course fitting, and it was Victor Hedman who completely neutralized John Tavares. And we'll get to the themes of this series and you know how the Islanders lost. But Victor Hedman to me was the MVP of the series for Tampa Bay. He played a phenomenal series, scored a couple goals. I think scored three goals that he have in this series. It was at least right. I don't remember now, but he had a tremendous series. He scores the first goal of the game, and really from then the Islanders were done. They just had no pushback. They had no fight. You want to get on them for that? You can. I mean, it was still an elimination game, and teams have come back from 3-1 before, so it's not like it was impossible. So I mean, just to excuse them, from that standpoint, I don't think I'm not going to go out of my way to do that. But at the same time, yeah, losing those two games at home the way they did in overtime, and it was just kind of inevitable that they were going to just come out in the manner that they did. And if they got behind early, they were not going to come back. And that's exactly what happened. And there was just really nothing to discuss, from really once they scored the first goal, Tampa. It was just all Tampa Bay from there. They dismantled the Islanders.
Tampa is just the better team overall.
And they are a better team. Oh, yeah, they established that because they beat the Islanders in five games. I mean, they were absolutely the better team, and nobody's going to question that. And that's the bottom line. And they lost to a better team. Question is, should Tampa Bay have been better than the Islanders since they were missing Steven Stamkos and Anton Strahlman? The Islanders were not missing their superstar player. They were not missing one of their top defensemen. Yeah, they had injuries. But why was Tampa Bay better despite the fact that they were missing those two players? And that's one of the questions that needs to be asked. And the question would be the guy upstairs.
Is it that the Islanders are just that much worse relative to Tampa Bay?
Well, I mean, it's not a question of, again, levels of how much better were they Tampa than the Islanders. I'm not going to say it was an ass kicking that they just, they didn't destroy them and sweep them in four games and, beat them like the Rangers did in 94, winning 6-0, 6-0 and 5-2, 5-2. Don't ask me. I remember though. Remember that was a dismantling and ass kicking in every sense of the phrase. This clearly wasn't, but I mean, anybody that watched all five games of the series saw a better Tampa Bay team, a team again, that was more composed. They had more, they were opportunistic. They, they waited for their opportunities to be able to, take advantage and, of Islander miscues and they were able to score timely goals. Obviously, scoring two overtime goals, tying the game late in game three, taking advantage of an Islander no show in game two, which is inexcusable. I mean, it happens, but it didn't have to happen. They could have maybe showed up for that game and maybe they come back 2-0 instead of tied 1-1. You don't have to concede game two just because you win game one. Yes, I know the idea is to split when you're the road team because now you have home ice advantage, but if you don't win your home games, then who cares? So Tampa Bay was able to win the game two pretty easily against the Islanders. Yeah. And then it was a coin flip in games three and four. Go ahead. But, the Islanders had an opportunity to win game three late. They blew it. Game four, they had an opportunity to get goals early and jump out to a big lead. They didn't. Grice didn't make a timely save in the third period of game four. Is out of position in game three in overtime, is screened in game four in overtime, and that's your series. But
yep.
What it translates to is that the Tampa Bay Lightning were better than the New York Islanders, and they deserve to win the series. All right.
And to this point, you really haven't bashed on, and I know you said up front that you wouldn't. But I still want to give you the opportunity to, one guy that we talked about earlier in the season during some of our shows was, I think it's one point he led the team in goals, Brock Nelson. I feel like he just disappeared the last couple months of the season. And I think you acknowledge that, his place at the top of the team leaderboard in goals was not something that you expected to last. Right, just because of the quality of his play. I don't know if you necessarily expected him to fall as far as he had, but he was, if you think about where was this guy? Like, you didn't hear his name like around the net even having many chances at scoring. It was just non-existent. There's one guy that, you know, I felt like just kind of fell off.
Yeah, well, I mean, I agree. So I think we can now get to the themes of this postseason, of this season for the Islanders, as we move into a season recap, which we'll do for a bit. If you want to save some of that for the next episode, we can do that too. But Brock Nelson, yes, was miserable. Was awful, was terrible, was in every sense of the, you can use any adjective to describe him, and you'd be right, at least a negative adjective. Brock Nelson, yes, he had a pretty good regular season, scored 26 goals. You can't discount that. He always leaves you wanting because you expect him to be that prototypical second line center that has, at least you think, the ability to be a two-way shutdown center because of his size, because of his scoring ability. I mean, every team covets that first line center, but once you have that guy, you're then looking for that second line guy that can be that two-way guy that can score 50 to 60 points, but can also match up against the other team's top line if you need to, that could play a good defensive game. And Brock Nelson has not developed into that player. His play away from the puck has been abysmal. His physical play is non-existent. His inability when pucks along the boards, it was on display throughout the entire postseason. He had a grand total of 5 points, one goal, which came in game one against Florida. I think he scored the Islanders' first goal of the playoffs, if you can believe that. Their first goal of the postseason in the, 11 games that they played, and not a single goal after that. And this is a guy that was their, as you mentioned, their second leading goal scorer during the regular season. Terrible postseason, wretched postseason. As much as I jump on Bailey and other guys, and you know, I kind of left Nelson alone there for a bit. But I mean, you can't, you know, I can't defend him anymore. I can't keep quiet on him anymore. He disappointed all Islander fans immensely with his play throughout the entire postseason, and it was alarming. And it's something that has to be addressed. You can't chalk it up to, well, he had a bad postseason. It happens. No. His play was alarming. And it's something that you have to wonder if this is going to be a trend going forward and not just a fluky thing. And I don't know the answer. But right now, if I had ventured to guess, I would say that this is the player that he is. And do you want that type of player on your team going forward? Or do you maybe look to try and move him while his contract is reasonable and his value is relatively high?
Who's going to want him?
Well, he scored 26 goals in a regular season. He can't.
We could have came into this episode trying to think about ways to talk up Brock Nelson so that, you know, Garth would get a better haul. And so
raise that trade value.
Any GMs of other teams listening, I think, we invite you to not even bother making an offer.
Look, he still scored 26 goals. That if there is another GM listening, yeah, whoever your superstar left winger is, John Tavares needs one of those. So we'll take him back. We'll throw in a third-round pick with Brock for that player. So,
yep.
Hall in Edmonton. Peter Chiarelli, are you listening? We want Taylor Hall. We'll give you Brock, Josh Bailey, and a third-round pick. Actually, we'll give you our first-round pick. Enjoy.
Look, I mean, there's positives that we have to take away. We can't just dwell on the negatives. I say it over and over again, and I think it's a way to remind ourselves that it's easy to be critical, but I think this team did play and played to the pretty much to the point of their talent compared to other teams in the season. Like, they did make it past the Rangers, you know. The other teams remaining are probably all better than the Islanders. They actually had chances to win a few of the games that they lost to Tampa Bay. It wasn't a complete embarrassment overall. They had their first playoff series win in 23 years.
I think you touched on the only two positives that I'm taking out of it. They won their first playoff series in 23 years. We got a couple great moments at the Coliseum. Hickey's overtime goal and double overtime. Obviously, Tavares's heroics in Game 6. Alan Quine was a nice story, seeing what he, you know, scoring the overtime goal, you know, on the first shot of Passover, whatever nickname people came up with that Game 5 against Florida. So that was a nice story, scoring that goal in Game 5. Grice played phenomenal in the first round against Florida. But I'll be honest, I don't think, other than the moment, the couple moments that they gave us, you know, Tavares and, you know, they're just winning the playoff series and giving us that thrill. And we'll get to this as we progress and move towards the off season. One thing I was going to say when we transition to that is, I don't look at this as a stepping stone. Everybody likes to put forth a narrative, you know, in sports in general, in every sport. People like to put forth a narrative of a team that struggles initially, builds up a team, builds up a core, gets to the playoffs, has a moment maybe or two, you know, but they lose it, but then they learn how to win, right? And they make baby steps. You know, they'll maybe win around the next year, and they'll eventually, you know, make it to the mountaintop. I mean, that's a story that everybody loves. I mean, the Islanders in the late 70s, losing multiple years, you know, losing to Lanny McDonald in game 7 in 78 at home against Toronto, losing to the Rangers in 6 games in 79 when they steamrolled the regular season. And then in 1980, you know, things are looking, you know, above average, you know, kind of mediocre. What's going on with this team? Does this team have to be broken up and dismantled? In comes Butch Goring, and they win 4 cups. So that's the type of, story arc that everybody loves. But I don't look at this as necessarily progressing into that. Because now, and again, we're going to get to all of it, but they are not going to have the same team next year. And when you look back, if you do a little retrospective here, when you look back to 2013, when they beat Pittsburgh, they played a tremendous series against the Penguins. And you're saying, wow, the rebuild's coming together. Now they're going to take the next step next year. And they took a major step back with this same group. And it's all Gart Snow's fault. That is 120% on Gart Snow, because he did nothing to make the team better in that offseason. He did an awful job that offseason. And it resulted in the team taking a huge step back, and they had to, you know, make moves just to try and, you know, get them back to where they were, and then some, which did occur last year. But I'll be honest, when you evaluate the team from last year and this year, I think the team last year overall was better. I thought that this year was, and kind of like their transition to the Barclays Center, was bumpy, it was uneven, and it was disjointed. And when you evaluate, you know, this season, I think that there were some positives, there were some bright spots, there were some encouraging things, but overall, after losing, you know, getting to the second round, which should not have been the team's goal should have been to win a cup, as any team that plays in a professional sport, that should always be your goal. But the team is going to be different next year, and they had an opportunity with this core group of players to maybe accomplish something special, to maybe reach the ultimate accomplishment, which is to win a cup. And they didn't. And the best that they can do is get to game 5 of the second round.
They made a good run towards the end of the year, where they had, you know, 4 or 5 tough games down the
stretch. They did.
When, you know, they were struggling there. They had that great, we say great based on the outcome, that 7-game road trip. I think they went 6-1 or something like that. I don't know.
But that was a microcosm of the season almost, because they played well. They had a good winning percentage. They finished the season with over 100 points again, but they did not look great in doing it.
The underlying play throughout looked, as you said, bumpy, even, and disjointed, you know, and
inconsistent.
And you go back and listen to our episodes. We were on them for that this whole time. And I still think, given the way that they played during the season, it shouldn't be surprising to anyone how the playoffs turned out for the Islanders.
Oh, no, absolutely not. And I'm not saying that
in fact, winning a playoff series, given how they played in the regular season, almost feels like an accomplishment. Doesn't make an excuse for the job done by the coaching staff and the GM. And I think that's something that, looking forward into this offseason, we're going to say for the next episode, but at least the players themselves, from what we saw, they pretty much took it as far as they could.
I agree. But you know what? The warts and the flaws in this team that we saw throughout the regular season showed up and came to a head in this postseason. Yep. The lack of secondary scoring, the lack of a legitimate winger for Tavares, who had a zillion line mates this year. The Islanders defense, terrible job transitioning the puck. Just clearing it out, dumping the puck out. Johnny Boychuk, oh my God, all he could do, I mean, when the puck was on his stick, I know I mentioned this in the prior episode, it was like a hand grenade on a stick. I mean, it was just that you hope that he gets it out of the zone and, you know, gets all the way down the ice before they could regroup and come back the other way. The lack of jam in the top six, which to me was a huge issue that was not addressed by Gart Snow in the offseason or the trade deadline. When I scream for Scotty Hartnell, Kyle Okposo, yeah, he scored in game four. But you know, I thought also was not great in this play, in this playoffs. I thought his best showing as an Islander was in 2013, where he was dominant and by far their best forward. That Kyle Okposo did not show up in this postseason, attached to John Tavares throughout, you know, the entire playoffs. It was attached to John Tavares's hip. Granted, you know, they started off with Franz there and the three of them looked, you know, great together, but then he wanted to move Franz off, you know, because they wanted to try and do some matchups with Franz and, you know, playing center and, you know, try and give some balanced scoring to the team. But that was a huge issue all season long. Victor Hedman, who I mentioned before, completely neutralized John Tavares, who had no points in games 2-5 after having a tremendous first round where he, again, you know, carried the team on his back, for a good portion of that series. And, you just saw all the flaws that this team had, just come to a head. Yeah, they didn't have their goaltender, Halak. Grice played out of his mind, came back to earth, in the first round, played out of his mind, came back to earth in the second round. Anders Lee, they missed his net front presence, clearly, but they didn't lose because they were missing Anders Lee. Mikhail Grabowski, maybe if he was healthy and, was playing up to his ability, he could have helped the team. But, you know, a complete lost season for him. What do they do with him going forward? I mean, again, question for, I guess, next episode. But, yeah, I mean, like you said, this was the best that you really could have expected. Great that they got the series win, a series which they did not, you know, outplay their opponent. Gave us a thrill. We were there for game 3 and 6, which was awesome. It was great. And, you know, nothing will take that away, despite their loss in the second round. But this really was the best that they can do, and nobody should be surprised.
At least,
and the blame for
personnel goes. Let's be clear,
right? And the blame for that lays squarely at the feet of the GM.
Well, look. So I think next show, what we're going to do is go into what you. So there's like two. There's two components to it. One is, what do you anticipate happening? And what if you were in Gart Snow's shoes, what would you do with these impending free agents that the team has, with their goaltending situation, extensions? The list goes on. So I think there's plenty to think about. We just want to, at the same time, enjoy some playoff hockey that's still going on because we're hockey fans.
And it is now 3-3.
It is, right. So I think this is sufficient for now. I think next time, probably next week, we'll visit, you know, the wound is still healing and it's still going to be the next time we come on, but it'll give us a chance to digest a little more and think about the issues that this New York Islander team faces to put the pieces together to have a stepping stone, which you're stating this season didn't really produce. That's what we want this team to transition to. So
yeah, well, this team is absolutely at a crossroads. I mean, this is going to be a watershed off season for the team. I don't think there's any question. The one thing I will just throw in there, and something that Islander fans can be happy about, that we can smile about, is that since the year 2000, Charles Wong has imposed a reign of terror on the Islander fandom and on the fan base and on the team, on the franchise, on the team. And that is coming to an end, everybody. We can all rejoice in the fact that Charles Wong's reign of terror is finally coming to an end on July 1st. And that is a positive, and that is a positive that we can take out of this episode and something that we can all smile about, because it is over. He is gone. Well, not gone, but he will not have a voice anymore. His voice will be meaningless. Charles, we hardly knew ye. Don't let the door hit you where the good Lord split you.
Well, you got a couple more chances to take some shots at him because we'll be back before July 1st.
Yeah, we will. And we will, as you said, we have a lot to talk about. I mean, last offseason, I guess nobody should have been surprised that Garth did nothing. And I'll save my criticisms and we'll get more into kind of, and, you know, I talked about a retrospective going back to, you know, obviously for the season going back to 2013. I mean, well, you know, I mean, we could go all the way back to the rebuild, and you know, I say we should do that. You know, we'll have a little fun with that, kind of look at where this team has gone, you know, come and gone since Garth took over, and you know, the rebuild began, and Josh Bailey's picked in 2008, and so forth. So I guess we could do something like that, have a little fun with that, and then just look ahead and all the decisions that are going to be coming and that will need to be made.
All right. Well,
all right.
Let's sound excited. Yes. Islanders energy. Islanders.
clap.
You feel proud for the players for giving it their all, and
they did. Hey, you know, well, most players. Gave it their all.
Most players. You know, so.
One other thing I'll just mention is that Travis Hamonic announced today, who was the Ultimate Warrior, who is my favorite player. Love Travis Hamonic. I think a lot of Islander fans, I think, would probably say that he is their favorite. Announced that his trade request that was made earlier in the season due to family, or made in the preseason, that was announced later in the season due to family reasons. Apparently, family member was sick. That situation is stabilized, and he has rescinded his request. So that is wonderful news for Islander fans. While we were thinking about what shiny forward that Garth might be able to get in the trade for Hamonic, I think we can all agree that the great news, the best news that we can get, is that Hamonic is not going anywhere.
And no, more news to come on that front of free agency, and you know, trying to overanalyze what the players are saying when asked the question by the single beat writer for the team. And so we'll see what develops. And so we'll be back soon. And there'll be plenty more podcasts in the future. Maybe we'll take a little break, but you know, we do plan to keep it going and maybe dabble
potpourri.
We'll dabble a bit in other New York sports. We're not solely watching the Islanders. We're watching far too many sports for our own sanity, but we continue to do so. And we will ask the listeners to suggest what they want to hear. You know, we can cover any New York team.
Multi-talented we are.
We'll get into fantasy sports, I'm sure. I can go on days about the legal status of fantasy sports currently. And sports betting, that I think is an interesting topic unto itself.
Yeah, well, those things, I would be the maestro, and I would let you, you know, carry the
it's even hard to
discourse there,
because it updates every day. There's a congressional hearing tomorrow about daily fantasy sports.
Is there really one?
Yeah. So
it seemed like there was no news on that for a while.
Oh, there's news. I think four states now have passed legislation legalizing daily fantasy sports.
Wow, how about that?
So it's moving forward, and you know, it's a transition from the FanDuel DraftKings duopoly, where they were kind of operating, you know, out there, and they still are to an extent, but it's shifting, and I think it's an interesting industry to follow and talk about, and fantasy sports itself. So look, I'm just saying, you know, I guess I'm just, without realizing it, demonstrating that there's plenty of other topics we could get into in depth. So, you know, hit us up on Twitter at Hip in the Lip, or on our Facebook page, Hip in the Lip. And of course, rate us on iTunes. We'll continue to ask you to do that, because we've had a lot of fun since we started in early January, and just a couple of guys rambling about a team that there's passion behind, and they're trying to establish the stepping stone, but questions are raised, and you know they did finally break through in some regard this year, which is fun to see and talk about. So, you know, and as they more settle into Barclays, and will New York embrace this team more so as the years go on? Well, there's a lot of interesting components surrounding.
Well, we know one person that will not embrace the team. Nobody cares about the Islanders. Nobody cares about the Hockeys. Okay, let's break down again Terry Collins' decision to double switch. You're an assessment in the sixth inning. More calls. Bob from Queens. How are you?
And there's the lip for you. So on that note, I'll say, until next time.
All right. Bye. Let's go. Islanders. Oh, and it's OT now. Capitals, Penguins. So
maybe a little more exciting hockey to go around.
Exciting. All right. Next.